Welcome to Wrestling with Theology. My name is Doug Minton. I am your host. I am the pastor at Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, as well as a lifelong wrestling fan. Wrestling with Theology wrestles with the history of pro wrestling as well as the theology of the Lutheran Church. This week's wrestling profile is the Midnight Express. The Midnight Express was one of the great tag teams throughout the 80s and 90s wrestling. Featuring nine different wrestlers, they made a splash wherever they wrestled. For the most part, the team was managed by Jim Cornette. According to original member Dennis Condrey, the name had nothing to do with the movie Midnight Express, but that they wore black tights, drove black cars, and partied well past midnight. Later versions of the tag team would use the theme song from the movie for their entrance music. The first combination for the Midnight Express was Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, and Norvell Austin from 80 to 83. Condrey and Rose formed a tag team in Southeastern Championship Wrestling in 80. In 81, they were joined by Norvell Austin. These three tried to run Southeastern just like they were the Freebirds, invoking the Freebird rule, but claiming it was their idea. In 83, when they lost the Southeastern tag team titles to Brad and Scott Armstrong, the three men went their separate ways. But in this combination, they were extremely successful. They held the AWA World Tag Team titles. They held the Southern Tag Team titles three times. The CWA World Tag Team titles. The Southeastern Tag Team titles 10 times. And the Windy City Pro Wrestling Tag Team titles once. When Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton came to Mid-South separately, Bill Watts put the two together as the new version of the Midnight Express. At this point, Jim Cornette was brought in as their manager. Instead of the group mentality in Southeastern, Condrey and Eaton focused on being a tag team. They were immediately put into a storyline with current Mid-South Tag Team champions Magnum TA and Mr. Wrestling 2. In this storyline, they tarred and feathered Magnum in the middle of the ring. They gained great heat when the Rock and Roll Express came into Mid-South after the Midnight Express won the tag team titles. After a lengthy feud, Condrey and Eaton went to World Class for a brief stint before signing with Jim Crockett Promotions in 85. In Jim Crockett, the feud with the Rock and Roll Express was reignited and brought to a whole new level. Towards the end of their run together, they had a lengthy feud with the Road Warriors over the NWA World Tag Team titles. One of the great matches in this feud was a scaffold match at Starrcade 86. Cornette was injured from falling from the scaffold when Big Bubba Rogers couldn't see him falling from the lights. Unfortunately, that's about all I can find for video of this match online. This combination of Condrey and Eaton, according to the number of title reigns, was the most successful Midnight Express. They held 51 title reigns. Some of them were the NWA World Tag Team titles, the Mid-South Tag Team titles twice, the American Tag Team titles, the All-Star Wrestling Tag Team titles 10 times, the International Wrestling Cartel Tag Team titles 10 times, the NWA Bluegrass Tag Team titles 10 times, NWA Rocky Top Tag Team titles 19 times. Overall, Condrey and Eaton are ranked number 21 all-time by PWI of tag teams. Condrey suddenly left Jim Crockett in March of 87. Big Bubba Rogers wrestled a few matches as Eaton's partner before Dusty Rhodes brought in Stan Lane. Lane, having had success as a singles wrestler and as part of the Fabulous Ones, was an instant fit with Eaton. Their biggest feud was with the Fantastics, Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton, over the U.S. Tag Team titles. Cornette, Eaton, and Lane left Jim Crockett Promotions for a while when Ted Turner bought the promotion. After the issues were resolved, the trio returned to wreak their havoc with a feud against the Freebirds for the World Tag Team titles. After that feud ended with a War Games match pitting the Midnight Express teaming with the Road Warriors and Dr. Death Steve Williams against the Freebirds and the Samoan SWAT team, managed by Paulie Dangerously, the Express turned heel again and began a feud with the Dynamic Dudes, Johnny Ace and Shane Douglas. The hinge on this feud was that Cornette managed both teams until Clash of the Champions 9. Toward the end of their time in WCW, they began a feud with Brian Pillman and Tom Zink. The team split up after Halloween Havoc 90 when Cornette and Lane left WCW. In this combination, they were the most enjoyable to watch. This was the best chemistry of all of the combinations. And the title reigns agree with that. They were the NWA World Tag Team Champions for 195 days, the ninth longest reign in history. They were the U.S. Tag Team titles three times for 505 days total. They were PWI's Tag Team of the Year in 87, and they are ranked number 32 all-time by PWI. Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose reunited in AWA in 87 and took on the name the original Midnight Express. They came to Jim Crockett in 88 with Paulie Dangerously. The two Midnight Expresses feuded for a short time before Condrey left Crockett once again very suddenly. The last match in the feud was a loser-leave-town match at Chi-Town Rumble. Jack Victory took Dennis Condrey's spot for the match. After a decade without a Midnight Express, Vince McMahon decided that there needed to be a new one. And the duo he picked? Bob Holly and Bart Gunn. Both had been tag team champions before in the WWF, but Vince made this team into a pair of glorified jobbers, according to a shoot interview by Jim Cornette. Their only title reign was the NWA World Tag Team titles, which was a joke. In 04, Eaton started a new version with Ricky Nelson in NWA Mid-Atlantic, where they won the tag team titles there. The team didn't last very long because Eaton would go on to team with Condrey and Orlane as the Midnight Express on the independent circuit. The last Midnight Express match was against the Rock and Roll Express in August of 2011. I'll be back in a moment with our Digging Deeper into Exodus Chapter 3. Let's dig a little deeper into Exodus chapter 3. Last month we left off after verse 6 of chapter 3. So we pick up in verse 7 as we are at the burning bush on Mount Sinai as God is talking to Moses. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of all my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. God tells Moses, not only are you standing on holy ground, but I am sending you on a holy mission to bring my people out of Egypt. This was the great calling. And to show what the purpose was that they were going to come back to this mountain, Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb, pick your name for it, and worship God there. This eventually becomes what Moses tells Pharaoh, is let my people go 3 days into the wilderness so that we may worship to our God, and then we will come back. Not that Moses had any intention of bringing the children of Israel back, because God had given him a specific command that they were going to go into a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Many people want to take this listing as separate tribes, that everybody was somehow different. However, all of them are Canaanites. The Canaanites also include the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. As we see from the nations that descend from Noah in Genesis chapter 10, starting in verse 15, Canaan fathered Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Arkites, the Sinites, the Arvadites, the Zemarites, and the Hamathites. Afterward, the clans of the Canaanites dispersed. So we have everything from Sidon in the northwest of the Promised Land all the way around that area. But the Promised Land that God was giving to the people was the territory of these particular ones. The Hittites from Heth, and the others from the other different sons of Canaan that descended from Ham, the son of Noah. These tribes were being cast out before the Israelites, not by the Israelites' mighty power, but by God's spoken word. We go on with verses 13 through 17. Then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, "The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey." Here God reveals himself as Yahweh, I am. There is no other God but him. His name means being. It is translatable in Hebrew in so many different ways. I am, I will be, I was, being. So many ways that this can be taken, but this is the eternal personal name of God. So when you read through your Bible, especially the Old Testament, and you see the word Lord written in small capitals, this is the name of Yahweh. This is God's personal name that he has given to the Israelites for the first time here through Moses, saying, "I am." So when you get to John chapter 6 and you have Jesus telling the Jews before Abraham was, "I am," he is using God's name there. And this name seals the promise to the Israelites. So as we go on into verses 18 to 22 to finish up this chapter. "And they," the Israelite elders, "will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty. But each woman shall ask for a neighbor and any woman who lives in her house for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. You shall put them on your sons and on your daughters. So you shall plunder the Egyptians.'" Sinai is a 3-day journey from Egypt. There's the question as to whether that's 3 days from Pharaoh's palace or if it's 3 days from the land of Goshen where the Israelites are living. But once we get to the actual time, of course, the number of people cause it to be a much longer time before they get to Sinai. But this is what God tells Moses to present to Pharaoh. We're going 3 days out. So basically, if we're not back in a week, you can come get us. But God says, I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. God already has in his mind the plagues that he is going to send upon Egypt. Not because he can't just make Pharaoh send the Israelites away. He wants to make Pharaoh understand who the real God is. So as we get to the plagues, we will see each of the Egyptian gods coming into play and being knocked over by God's power that this God cannot overcome. Then Pharaoh will let the people go. But not until every one of God's signs has been done. And then when that happens, when Israel is allowed to leave, then they will plunder Egypt. When we get to Mount Sinai and they build a golden calf and they build the tabernacle at the end of Exodus, people want to ask, where did they get all this stuff? Right here, verses 21 and 22 of chapter 3. They will plunder the Egyptians before they leave. The Egyptians will be so desperate to get rid of them that they will give them, literally, the shirt off their back and everything in their homes just to get rid of them. This is the nuisance that the Israelites will become to the Egyptians. No longer acceptable as slaves, no longer able to be worked with, but now just a total nuisance that needs to be gotten rid of. And so the Israelites will leave. But that doesn't come for a few more chapters, and we will get to them leaving when we get to that point. And next month we will pick up in Exodus chapter 4 as Moses is given other signs to impress upon Pharaoh the power of Yahweh. Thank you for your time and listening to this podcast. If you'd like to hear more, go back to our archives to hear the previous episodes of Wrestling with Theology. Also hear Sunday morning sermons from Redeemer. If you are in the Twin Cities area on Sunday morning, you are welcome to join us at Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church at 4201 Regent Avenue North in Robbinsdale, just off of the corner of 42nd Avenue and Highway 100. Just look for Jesus blessing the travelers along the road. Our services are at 9 a.m. We have Bible study at 10:30 following the service, with coffee hour in between. We encourage you, anytime you are in the area, to join us for worship and to wrestle with theology with us.